Senator Vance, I'm going to stop you because I know exactly what happened. I'm going to stop you. The incidents were limited to a handful of apartment conflicts, apartment complex.
Yeah, even the media types who are fronting for the Kamala Harris campaign.
The naked bias.
Even they're having some trouble now. It's not just Kamala who's having trouble. Welcome, everybody. Monday edition of the radio program, a record, the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. It is 4 minutes after 6 o'clock in the morning. Yes, we love hearing from you. And if you want to give us a call or just text us your comments or your questions, we're happy to get them here. 206-421-5757. That's 206-421-5757. Remember last week I was telling you, don't want to get overconfident, but it looks like things are slowly circling the drain at the Kamala Harris campaign. There's a number of reasons for this, but you see it in various places simultaneously. And we're going to have the James Carville who here pretty soon, aren't we, Phil?
I'm still working on that one.
Because James Carville is just a perfect example of the current state of the campaign. We are 3 weeks out, 22 days left in this campaign. And some of the leading spokespeople for the Kamala Harris campaign are panicking. I mean, you're going to hear a little later on from our buddy James Carville, who was Bill Clinton's campaign manager in 1992, the Raging Cajun, and he's just gone crazy.
Does he have Trump derangement syndrome?
I think he's just deranged, period. But he's calling Trump a Nazi. Again, this is the former campaign manager.
And he's usually been one in the past to be at least a little bit candid about, Democrats or this candidate or that candidate aren't particularly great right now.
Oh, they're going too far to the left, he'll say. I'm not talking about issues that matter, people. They're sitting there talking about gender transformation surgery. And that doesn't make any sense. We need to start talking about people who are thinking about issues right close to home. Anyway, that's what we usually get from Carville. But now he's also a very partisan Democrat, and now he is panicking. He says Donald Trump's going to round people up.
Is he off his medication?
That's maybe? Call Mary Madeline. Ask her. But
It's HIPAA laws. We don't get to know. It's all right.
So this is where the Democrats are finding themselves. And it doesn't help that a couple of polls are clearly not working in their favor. Let me give you an example, because some of you are thinking, John, what are you talking about? The media coverage, print and electronic, radio and TV and newspapers, magazines, online posts, all say it's a neck and neck race. Well, that is true, but you need to look at where the momentum is. And this is what has Democrats worried. Now, this is MSNBC pollster Steve Kornacki, the one real, honest, straightforward journalist at MSNBC, someone who's not in the tank for the Kamala Harris campaign. Listen to what he said over the weekend
Numbers say it. It is a tie game here weeks before the election, and it's that shift. Our last poll taken in the wake of that September debate, Harris had opened up that advantage over Trump. Gone in our new poll. What goes into that? What's behind that? I think this one is revealing. This is the basic perception voters have of these candidates. Is it positive? Is it negative? Now, these are not great numbers for either one. Trump, 43 positive, 51 negative. He's 8 points underwater, you might say. But look at Harris. Exact same positive score and that negative number almost in the exact same place. And this is it. The last time we polled this question after that debate, Harris had really made up ground in this area. Look, she had a positive rating, 48 to 45. So that advantage has all in the last few weeks in our poll washed away for her. Then there's some issues, some characteristics here. These are advantages in red here that you see for Trump now versus September. On the immigration and the border, we ask voters, who would be better on this? In September, Trump had a big advantage. It's gotten bigger. On inflation and the cost of living, Trump's advantage now hits double digits. And on the question of who represents change, Harris had the advantage in September. She still does, but lower.
So,
this is a big deal. The issues that people care most about, inflation and the border, the economy and the border, Donald Trump had a big lead, and now it's gotten bigger. So what that means is as people are starting to pay attention to this campaign, keep in mind, a large number of Americans, they're not like you and me. We think about politics all the time. A large number of Americans don't. And they're only now paying attention. And the issues they care about are the same issues that you and I care about and that most Americans care about: rising prices, whether it's food, whether it's your power bill, whether it's price of gasoline. They care about those. They care about the border and all the problems that have resulted from the border. But they're just not that into politics. They don't care much about politics. Well, now that they are starting to pay attention, since there is an election coming up in 3 weeks, the candidate who is better to address the issues they care about is Trump. That's what the numbers are saying. And this has Democrats nervous. The second thing that has them nervous is that when Joe Biden left the race, among Democrats, there was a sense of almost euphoric relief. Thank God he is gone. Now we have a chance. Now we could actually win this thing. And Kamala Harris went from being relatively unpopular. Remember, she was seen as a liability to the ticket as vice president. All of a sudden, all the ranks closed behind Kamala. And she became the anointed one. So she got a big boost from that. And then comes the Democratic convention. It's a coronation. She gets a big boost from that. And then comes the debate. And she got a big boost from the debate. But among undecided voters, it didn't help her much at all because she was more poised than Donald Trump, who, after all, let's face it, was up against three. It was Trump versus both of the ABC moderators, who were awful and very partisan and very biased. But bottom line here is that those people who are undecided wanted to hear more about Kamala Harris, what she was going to do, and they were, for the most part, not impressed. But it was perceived that it was a huge night for her. So you have Biden stepping out and the euphoria among Democrats that he was not going to be a candidate, the coronation at the convention, and then her debate performance, and she was ahead of Trump, doing real well in the polls. And now it's a neck and neck race. Now everything is back to a neck and neck race. This is why the Democrats are nervous. Back to Kornacki here.
Significant because voters are telling us change is a critical issue for them, not the direction you want to be going in there, Steve.
No, absolutely not. And maybe a reason for that, too, is remember, she's the VP in an unpopular administration. Look, we ask Joe Biden's policies as president. Do you think they're helping or hurting your family? Look at that. Almost 2-1 say hurting more than helping. His job approval rating is in the low 40s. And then here's the twist. When you ask folks, when Trump was president, were his policies helping or hurting? Look at that difference. 44% say helping, 31% say they hurt. So retrospectively, wow, Trump is getting some numbers here. Maybe he didn't even get when he was president.
Okay. Here's another reason why the Democrats are nervous. This day, October 14th in 2016, Hillary Clinton, this day in 2016, Hillary Clinton was 6.5 points ahead of Donald Trump in the polls. 6.5 points she lost. At this point, October 14th in 2020, 4 years ago, Joe Biden was more than 9 points ahead of Donald Trump and barely pulled it out with all the controversy that ensued there. But barely pulled out a victory in the Electoral College with a 9-point lead at this point. Kamala Harris has a 1.7% lead. And most of the late-breaking polls in the last couple of days have moved it to a dead heat. So Hillary Clinton up 6.5, she loses. Biden up over 9 points, barely wins. Kamala Harris is up 1.7%. And the trend is moving in Trump's direction. This is why the Democrats are nervous. And this is why we'll play this clip here from J.D. Vance and Martha Raddatz. Listen to how the Democrats are going so far out of their way to try and basically make the case for the Democrats. This is J.D. Vance and Martha Raddatz from ABC News.
The Republican mayor of the city said flatly the city and state have not been taken over or invaded or occupied by migrant gangs.
This is in Aurora, Colorado, which was in the news because gangs have been taking over Venezuelan gangs, illegal alien gangs from Venezuela, criminal gangs who have migrated here, have been taking over apartment complexes there where other migrants are living. Let's continue.
So do you support Donald Trump making those claims that the Republican mayor says were grossly exaggerated and have hurt the city's identity and sense of safety? I understand what you're saying, that some people left behind, but he's making these statements that the mayor is flat out disputing.
Well, Martha, you just said the mayor said they were exaggerated.
Grossly exaggerated.
That means there's got to be some element of truth here. And of course, President Trump was actually in Aurora, Colorado, talking to people on the ground. And what we're hearing, of course, Martha, is that people are terrified by what has happened with some of these Venezuelan gangs.
Senator Vance, I'm going to stop you because I know exactly what happened. Martha. I'm going to stop you. The incidents were limited to a handful of apartment complexes, and the mayor said our dedicated police officers have acted on those concerns. A handful of problems.
Only, Martha, do you hear yourself? Only a handful of apartment complexes in America were taken over by Venezuelan gangs, and Donald Trump is the problem and not Kamala Harris's open border. Americans are so fed up with what's going on, and they have every right to be. And I really find this exchange, Martha, sort of interesting because you seem to be more focused with nitpicking everything that Donald Trump has said rather than acknowledging that apartment complexes in the United States of America are being taken over by violent gangs. I worry so much more about that problem than anything else here. We've got to get American communities in a safe space again. And unfortunately, when you let people in by the millions, most of whom are unvetted, most of whom you don't know who they really are, you're going to have problems like this.
Boy, I tell you, J.D. Vance just slammed the door on her. He is just unflappable. He is so poised, so strong, so self-assured, and he framed it just perfectly. Here she is saying, Donald Trump's complaining about Venezuelan gangs taking over in Aurora, Colorado, these apartment complexes, and the mayor says that's grossly exaggerated and he's a Republican. What do you have to say for yourself? And then when J.D. Vance says, well, it sounds like what Donald Trump said was he was addressing a real situation. And she says, oh, the mayor. And, of course, the mayor's obviously going to want to make himself look good and make his city look good. So I understand the spin he's going to put on this. But the mayor says it's only a few apartment complexes. And J.D. Vance said, are you even listening to yourself? You're nitpicking whether Donald Trump exaggerated when we've got Venezuelan gangs, criminal gangs, illegally entering the United States, taking over apartment complexes? Perfect.
Straight out of prison, too,
perfect.
Some of those.
Yeah, perfect.
And, John, you know this, how many people never report things?
Oh, my goodness, yes, especially if they're in the country illegally. They are. That is why they are often preyed upon by other more brutal and ruthless, vicious illegals. Good point, radio legend Mark Christopher. You are listening to the radio program of record, The John Carlson Show. I can't wait, 6:35, to play you James Carville, just going nuts. But again, it's a sign. I play it not just for entertainment value, but I will play it because it's a sign of the growing distress and desperation among what I'll call Team Kamala. We got a busy morning ahead of us here on the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. It is 21 minutes after 6. Philip J. Vandervoort III around the corner with the first social media sweep this morning. And speaking of this morning, good morning. Great to have you aboard. Oh, a little Richie Valens.
Need a little getty up and go here with the changes in temperatures and weather and what's coming for the week here. So there you go.
26 minutes after 6 o'clock in the morning. All right, Philip J. Vandervoort III, I know you've got a great social media sweep report this morning.
Follow-up to stuff that you and Lars Larson were talking about on the show last week, the social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. So this one surfaced Friday morning, right around the time your show was wrapping up, and it involves Jane Fonda, the actress, campaigning in Washington against the four initiatives that are on the ballot, the statewide initiatives.
Oh, she's against all four of them. Wow.
Yeah, okay. I mean, she's singled out a couple, but I think in general, the state Democratic Party has apparently brought Jane Fonda to Washington. So this is the new Exhibit A in how utterly bizarre politics are here in Washington. Compliments of Jane Fonda. Listen to this 49-second clip. She's going to attempt to tell you about a candidate for state legislature that she's endorsing, but she doesn't even really seem to know the individual's name. I think she says the person's last name. It's all very vague. And then you'll get the irony that she complains about Brian Haywood being from California at the end. Here we go.
Hi, I'm Jane Fonda, and I'm here with a candidate that we have to get elected. She is going to be Representative Demian, and she is a down-ballot candidate for the state legislature. Her opponent is a Democrat who should be a Republican, who takes money from big pharma, from timber, from oil companies. And he tries to kill all the good legislation that would help people of Washington State. This woman is one of the best candidates that I've ever had the honor to support. Vote with climate in your heart and vote all the way down ballot and vote no on all the ballot initiatives. They're all being funded by a hedge fund guy who just moved here from California.
So she's coming up. I'm just going to presume that one of her last places of residence was California. I don't know if she's currently in California.
She is.
Okay. She's complaining about a guy from California coming up here. She comes up here as an interloper, carpetbagger, to try and campaign against these initiatives. You can't make this stuff up. Climate in your heart?
You know,
it's easy for somebody of the richest of the rich to say.
I winced a little bit at the Republican National Convention when Donald Trump brought Hulk Hogan out of mothballs.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, to tear open his, shirt. And I thought,
do the big time wrestling shtick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's kind of an old act now. I mean, sure. Hulk's well into his 70s.
And Trump did some of the WWE stuff back in the day to cross promote.
Oh, he did. Sure, right. He did. He's friends with these people. Yep, exactly. Jane Fonda's 86 years old. I mean, talk about someone who's well past her use-by date.
And she's complaining about Big Pharma?
And notice she just
Where did all those Botox injections come from, Jane?
One of the best candidates I've ever had the honor.
Nice hyperbole.
And she only had her last name.
Didn't get familiar enough with the candidate to get a first and last name.
Didn't catch her first name, candidate, who's the most impressive I've ever had the honor.
Yeah. I'm so impressed. I didn't take time to get to know your first name.
Was there any crowd there? I mean, it was like an echo quiet hall.
I mean, I don't know. How big the crowd was.
Jane, please come back. Do more campaigning.
Yeah, right?
Brian Haywood wants you to do more campaigning against the initiatives. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. It is 6:30. When we come back, if you want to hear someone even more unhinged than Jane Fonda, wait until you hear James Carville, the Ragin' Cajun, the man who helped make Bill Clinton president in 1992, now a media favorite, at least on CNN and MSNBC. Wait until you hear why he says you should not vote for Donald Trump and what this says about the current state of the Kamala Harris campaign. Straight around the corner here. Again, the theme of this morning's show is that the Kamala Harris campaign is getting increasingly worried and distressed, and it's showing itself, it's exhibiting itself, it's manifesting in several different areas simultaneously. The first is the polls, which show a race that is now a dead heat after Kamala Harris had an earlier lead from the euphoria among Democrats when Joe Biden exited the race, followed by the National Convention for the Democrats, which was really more of a coronation, followed by the debate she had with Donald Trump. She was ahead of him by, three, four, in some polls, 5 points. Now it's back down to a dead heat. And the Democrats are worried because the scrutiny of Kamala Harris is growing and building. And secondly, the issues that people care most about, inflation, rising costs, and the border, people are associating Donald Trump more with who's going to make things better about the things they care most about. That's a second way. And here's a third way, is some of the Democrat spokespeople are just going nuts. Listen to Jim Carville complaining that Donald Trump is a Nazi, that he's a Hitler wannabe, And he's going to round up his opponents when he wins the race. This is Jim Carville appearing on Jen Psaki. Remember Jen Psaki, the peppermint patty of the White House? She was, you know, the ginger-haired press spokesman before Karine Jean-Pierre. Anyway, here we go.
I didn't know that he was going to schedule a rally at Madison Square Garden to mimic the Nazi rally of 10 February 1939. So we have... They're telling you. And by the way, if they win, they're going to correctly say, we told you in the election what we're going to do, and you voted for us. You have green-lighted the whole thing. And if we don't tell people about that, if they don't, if these young black men, well, how do you think they're going to do? If you're a young black male and Trump-inspired army roundup of people, how well do you think you're going to do in that? You think you got nothing to lose? How about looking at American history for one time?
Wow. That's Jim Carville talking to young black male voters about Donald Trump rounding them up. Wow. Remember when Joe Biden, when Mitt Romney was running, milquetoast Mitt Romney was running for president in 2012, and Joe Biden, who was then vice president, addressing a all-black crowd, said that Republicans are, yeah, they're going to put you all back in chains. Remember that line? Now they're doing the same thing. They're doing the same thing, trying to frighten black voters. They clearly don't have much respect for. But let's continue. More of Carville.
And see what can happen here. And they are telling you, we're not making this up. This is not, we can be fact-checked by anybody. They have promised military roundup. They've promised the gates of hell will rain on the enemies. The Supreme Court has green-lighted it. They were asked a question, if a Navy SEAL is ordered to assassinate a political enemy, the president can't be, there's nothing wrong with that. That's just part of his job. They are telling you they're doing all of this. Pay attention to them right now, please. They're telling you.
It's, I'm, exactly.
Okay, all right. Now, this is not new as a tactic by the Democrats when their back's against the wall and things are starting to move against them. As I mentioned, you had Joe Biden telling a black audience, the Republicans are going to put y'all back in chains in 2012. And then a lot of people forget about this. Do you remember the closing weeks of the campaign of 1980 between Ronald Reagan and Jimmy Carter? The Carter campaign began putting out ads, and of course their spokespeople fanned out among media saying, Ronald Reagan, if he's elected, he's going to start a war. Reagan will start a war. He's a warmonger. He's a nuclear cowboy. He's unhinged. He's extreme. He's going to start a war. I remember those ads where you see, you know, the man on the street, supposedly a man on the street. Yeah, I just think Reagan's going to start a war. Now, when the media went to Reagan, and this is where Reagan, when it comes to communication, is a little more effective than Donald Trump, because Donald Trump says exactly what's on his mind and in exactly what mood he's in. And sometimes he'll yell it, and sometimes he'll scream, and sometimes, you know, he'll shout. He always sounds reasonable when he's speaking at room temperature. But Reagan understood that they were trying to get him to lose his cool. and then say, you see, a guy like this? And instead, when the media came to Reagan, Reagan just said, boy, you know, these attacks are just a sign of hysteria. You begin to wonder what is with people making comments like this. So, very interesting how we've been here before. When the Democrats start to lose, they start to get extreme. They start to get very ad hominem. And you now have James Carville saying that Donald Trump is a Nazi and he's going to round up his opponents, which include young black men. He's going to round them all up. These people, you know, the easy refrain is these people are crazy. They're crazy like a fox. They're trying to rally their base. And if they have to say stuff like that to rally their base, they'll say it. Of course, when you start saying that Donald Trump is not just a danger to democracy, but that he's a Nazi and he's going to round you up, what impact does that have on the mood of America? There have been two assassination attempts on Donald Trump already. Do you think that Jim Carville doesn't know that rhetoric like this can send someone who's already out there on the fringes, on the margins, over the top? The second assassination attempt against Donald Trump that was foiled, this was on the golf course, that was one of the Dem activists going over the top, going over the edge. And so that's what you have to be prepared for when you have rhetoric like this. Yet another attempt on Trump's life. Quentin is calling from Grays Harbor, County Aberdeen. Hoquiam on the John Carlson Show.
Good morning, John. You know, listening to that, I find that sadly not that surprising, because it's that language in the past has been used successfully, I should say, because for quite a while, the black population, the voting bloc anyway, has been receptive to that type of messaging, especially through black so-called civil rights activists as proxies and mouthpieces for the Democratic establishment and the DNC machine. It has been effective, but we're
now you yourself are black. When you talk to other black people who fall for stuff like this, how do you convince them? How do you expose that what they're being told is just pure, unadulterated BS?
I try to distill it, our discussion, back to just basic principles. I try to have a principle argument that's more focused on character, context, rather than color and race, because that is what the Democrats do. They focus on racial identity politics. I try to discuss and frame, I try to dispel their premise about race and say, let's focus on the actual issues. And when you start talking about issues on principles, you can get some people, not everyone, you can get some people, regardless of their race, to think about why they vote the way they vote and why they support an individual based on what they say they support them on. So why do you support Kamala Harris beyond the fact that she's a woman of color? Are you going to vote for her policy? What policy do you support? And when you break it down like that, you can kind of see sometimes people have really no idea, because they actually never thought that way. It's always been an emotional vote casting.
Are you surprised? We have only 20 seconds. Are you surprised that growing numbers of black men, particularly young black men, are not Kamala supporters?
No, I am not, because I think it's just something that's been going on for quite a while, because I believe there have been some black conservatives who've had some impact way back in the past. I'm talking your Walter Williams types, your Larry Elders, your Shelby Seals, they've been out there for a long time, and your Thomas Sowell's, I think their messaging is now having a delayed reaction and effect. And
delayed reaction.
Young men. Yes.
Very interesting analysis, because that's what the polls show. A growing number of young black men just not buying it this time out. They're not falling in line. They're thinking for themselves, and they think that Kamala Harris comes up short. Who never comes up short is Lars Larson, our Noon to 3 host, joining me right around the corner. The Commute with Carlson continues.
Morning, John. I hope the weekend treated you well.
It treated me very well. I'm hearing about a controversy. Here we go again. DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion, rearing its ugly head. Go ahead.
Well, let's go to the place that manages, in this case in Oregon, but it's the same in Washington. You have a forestry agency that manages state lands. These are worth tens of billions of dollars. They are worth potentially a lot of money in income when you cut the trees instead of letting them burn down. This last year, both Oregon and Washington, Oregon had a record fire year, bigger than any other fire year in history. And what did they do with the number two guy at the Department of Forestry? Right in the middle of fire season, beginning of August, they put him on paid leave at home and said, you may have no contact with anybody at the agency. Now, what horrible thing did he do? Did he rob a bank? Did he shoot somebody? He did, and I'm going to quote, he focused on hiring people, only the people who are the best qualified for jobs at the Department of Forestry, instead of gender and identity. And that is, quote, beyond that he should have been looking beyond gender and beyond gender and identity, seeking only candidates the most qualified for the job. His horrible crime that he gets sidelined for is the number two guy in the agency and the guy in charge of fire response is for hiring the most qualified people instead of taking note of their gender and gender identity. This is where DEI starts to burn forests down.
Well, and plus it's illegal.
Yes.
It's illegal to discriminate on the basis of race.
And yet the DEI agency in the Department of Forestry, believe it or not, Megan Doniker, who's the usual kind of freak show with the purple hair and all the rest of that stuff, is insisting you have to look at gender identity. Just hiring the most qualified person is wrong, she says.
This is why, this is the lesson, this is the takeaway. I'm sure Lars will agree with me. You cannot reform or tweak or change DEI. You have to be done with it.
Eliminate it.
Eliminate it entirely. Thank you very much, Lars Larson. Hour number two of The Commute right around the corner.
My campaign has raised $1 billion.
Oh, my Lord. How are you not winning by a landslide?
That's a question I scream into my pillow every morning.
Welcome at Saturday Night Live. Maya Rudolph is wonderful as Kamala Harris.
She should go on
tour. $1 billion. And it's basically a dead heat.
Oh, happy Columbus Day, everybody. The John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Not going to have a problem with traffic today. Most schools are out. And no mail delivery today, federal holiday. So there's going to be fewer people on the road. And
no holiday mode for us, though. Boy, first hour proof of that.
Well, there, especially where we are right now, 3 weeks out. I mean, there is so much stuff that is going on here on The Commute with Carlson. By the way, did you guys see what went down with Elon Musk's SpaceX?
We were just watching video.
I think we just saw some video of this, if we're talking about the same thing. This is the rocket that...
Yeah. Now
lands itself, basically.
He has already made history by having rockets that he sends up into space come back vertically. Mm-hmm. They come back and
the same launch position, basically.
They land the same position when they launched up. They don't splash down cone first into the ocean. They come back, and they come back slowly.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So over the weekend, they not only brought back one of their rockets vertically, they brought it back into the tower.
It's like into a basketball hoop, basically.
Yeah, well, it's basically, you see what looks like a launch tower, the kind of tower you see whenever you have a rocket go up. And you could see this online, just Google SpaceX tower. And the rocket is coming back, and it's slowing, and it's tilting, and
maybe
it's turning.
Just a slight angle, but yeah.
And then all of a sudden, it nestles itself. You see the tower. It nestles itself into the tower. It goes right back into the slot.
Yeah. Okay. Can I just add a little bit to this? Because this happened yesterday morning, and I couldn't believe what I was seeing. Remember the rockets, the Apollo missions? You'd have it go up, and it'd launch, and then the booster would break away.
Yeah.
And the spaceship continues on. That booster is what we're talking about. That is what returned back to the launch pad. Okay. Spaceship continued on.
Okay.
The booster was brought back so they could use
it again.
That's
what I said. The rocket. The
booster.
The booster.
Yeah, it's wild.
But instead of just falling into the ocean somewhere, it comes back and lands back in the tower
launch pad. Yeah.
Launched from. Incredible.
Had these weird metal arms that said, "We're going to catch you and bring you back." Something to see. It's unbelievable.
This is what Elon Musk does when he's not building Teslas.
Yep.
Like bringing back a drone, supersized.
Now, let me add another dimension to this story. Did you hear that for political purposes only, California is now trying to deny him the right to take off to have rockets launched from Vandenberg Air Force Base?
Yeah, down there in Southern California?
Yes. They are now raising objections. The objections have nothing, zero, zilch to do with concern about safety or environmental concerns. It is just because they don't like Elon Musk.
This is what happens in California when you move your company to Texas. You can't do other stuff there in the future.
The California Coastal Commission has voted, and it was a very close vote, just one vote, but the only people on that are, of course, appointees from Governor Newsom. They have voted to deny Elon Musk's company, SpaceX, and the U.S. Air Force permission to increase the number of their rocket launches from Vandenberg Space Force Base. And as Phil said, it's near Santa Barbara, Southern California. Here is their rationale. We're dealing with a company the head of which has aggressively injected himself into the presidential race, said the chairwoman, Carol Hart.
I'll be looking forward to that getting applied to all the dot-com and high-tech money in the Bay Area.
Her colleague on the Coastal Commission, Mike Wilson, ranted about Elon Musk's wealth and his social media platform, Twitter or X. Another member of the commission, who's a former union official, complained about Musk for, quote, spewing and tweeting political falsehoods, which means stuff she disagrees with. Again, they're not even making a pretense that this is about environmental or safety. Yeah.
Is there any chance that anybody on this California Coastal Commission has not been appointed by a Democratic governor like, say, Gavin Newsom?
Yeah.
I'm guessing it's all appointed members. There are no publicly
appointed.
Elected.
Nope.
Right?
Nope. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But they have a great deal of power. And here they are. Now, Musk, Carl, you don't push Elon Musk around without getting some pushback. He's said that he will sue them on grounds that they're violating his First Amendment rights, that they're not letting him do that because he's expressed himself on issues that they disagree with, and that is illegal. I think he's got a great case to make. But again, what he's doing is so cool, and it's so advantageous for all of humanity looking into the future. And yet, look at how, again, one-party rule in California, they are now trying to deny him future launches. That's what they are all about. All right, you're listening to The Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. We have been talking about how things are getting very restless, a lot of concern within Team Kamala Harris about the direction of this race. And it's not going well for them. She had another bad week last week. And we played Steve Kornacki from MSNBC pointing out that the polls are moving. It's a dead heat race, but is moving in Trump's direction. And so are concerns like the issues that voters care most about are the issues that Donald Trump is strongest, economy and the border, and where she is weakest. Now here comes some more bad news for Democrats. You may have heard me talk about this the last week and a half, but Harry Enten from CNN drives it home over the weekend.
Let's take this out nationally, all right? This is party registration, but let's look at party identification. Party registration, of course, is you're actually registered with the party. Party ID is when you say, I feel like a Democrat today, I feel like a Republican today. They're correlated, but they're not exactly the same. But I think it gets at the trend that's going on here, Manu. All right, so party ID nationally. You go to October, November of 2016, Democrats had a 3-point advantage. You go 4 years ago, Democrats had a 6-point advantage. Look at where we are today, Manu. Republicans with a 1-point advantage. A very different picture, very much mirroring what we see in the party registration numbers in those key battleground states and Pennsylvania in particular.
And it actually just shows you, too, why Harris is doing what she's trying to do. She's trying to moderate a little bit on these issues, trying to reach those very voters because the party registration is changing and the demographics of the voters are changing. And those are the people she needs to attract.
Absolutely. And, you know, the GOP leads by a point in party identification right now. The average when the Republican Party loses is the Democrats ahead by 8. When the Republican Party wins, the average party ID advantage for Democrats is 3. Republicans right now, Manu, are doing even better than the average when they win. If there's one little nugget that I think Republicans are really hopeful for, it's this party ID and this party registration data. It really points in a good direction for them and for Donald Trump.
Wow.
Yeah, this is unprecedented, virtually unprecedented. I think you have to go back to maybe it was 84 Reagan ran for re-election and won a 49-state landslide. But every election since that time, including Reagan's first election in 1980, more Americans said that they identify with the Democratic Party than with the Republican Party. But back then, the Democratic Party was more diverse. There were a lot of conservative Democrats. They called themselves boll weevil Democrats in Congress. And there were plenty of moderate Scoop Jackson type Democrats. But now you have a party where John F. Kennedy would never have been welcome. Too white, too male, too wealthy, too moderate. Remember, he favored tax cuts to get the economy going. He was tough. He wanted to get tougher on the Russians. He was all about space exploration. You know, he's kind of a macho guy. So today's Democratic Party, not so much known for these things. And so you have a pronounced shift. Again, as you heard Harry Enten point out, and I've pointed this out to you as well in previous shows, when about 8% or more Americans, by an 8% margin, say that they identify more with the Democratic Party, then the Democrats are going to win. And in previous elections, I'm thinking 2004, the 2000 election, the 2016 election, when Republicans won, there were still a majority of voters saying they identify more with the Democratic Party, but that margin was down to about 3%. 3% more people preferred the Democrats than Republicans. Now, an outright majority of voters say they identify more with the Republican Party. This is a very big deal. And here's something else you need to keep in mind. There is a larger proportion of Republicans who will vote for Trump than Democrats who are going to vote for Kamala Harris. Excuse me. There is a larger share of Republicans voting for Trump than Democrats voting for Harris. Yes, there's going to be some Republicans who vote against Trump. Almost all of them appear to be in Washington, D.C., and a few academically inclined Republicans here in Washington. But for the most part, rank-and-file voters who are Republican are going to be voting Republican. A larger proportion of them will be voting for Trump than Democrats who will be voting for Harris. So this is one more reason why Democrats are really concerned. And another reason is, you know, here's another example of the media trying, desperately trying to rescue a talking point for the Democrats. Kamala Harris, in a desperate attempt to change the subject, has released her health records, daring Donald Trump to do the same, demanding that he do the same. And of course, here's Kristen Welker on Meet the Press, who has House Speaker Mike Johnson on her show, and she presses him to call on Donald Trump to do the same. It does not work out well for her. Have a listen.
Donald Trump's health is on display. Everyone in America can see it. The man works nonstop. He never quits. He probably sleeps 4 hours a night. He doesn't require as much sleep as the average person. He's an unusual figure. And this is the strength that we need in a time like this. We're in the most dangerous moment since World War II. You have to have strength. You have to have a steady hand. You have to have a commander in chief that our allies respect and our enemies fear. They do not fear Kamala Harris. They do fear Donald Trump.
Mr. Speaker,
that's what people are going to vote on.
Just be very clear. He hasn't released all of his medical records. He released two letters. Should he release the results of the cognitive test?
It's unnecessary.
Test,
he's said, on display every minute.
So it's unnecessary. What? You can see that he didn't release his medical records. You don't want to know things like his cholesterol level, whether he's dealing with any issue that we may not know about, if he's going to be commander in chief. And he also said he would release cognitive tests.
Kristen, listen to your question.
Should he release that?
The American people... Kristen, the American people don't care about the cholesterol level of Donald Trump. They care about the cost of living and the fact they cannot pay for groceries because Kamala Harris and Joe Biden's policies have put them in that situation. The medical records are irrelevant. Let's talk about things that the American people care about.
Yeah. Again, I don't blame Kamala Harris's people for trying to make this an issue. I mean, talk about anything other than prices. Anything other than the cost of living, anything other than inflation, anything other than the price of gas. Anything other than the border, because that puts them in a tough spot, too. So, yes, let's talk about health care or let's talk about health records. I'm releasing my health records. You should do the same. Again, that's what you do late in the campaign when the issues that are front and center are not issues that are helping you. It's a diversion, it's a distraction, and it's obvious. But again, the media is going to try and beat the drum, and it ain't going to work. These are the same people, the same media people, the same political people who were assuring us of how Joe Biden was on top of things, including Kamala Harris, by the way. Joe Biden was, man, in private, he is so sharp. He is so clear-headed. He puts the rest of us to shame. Remember Karine Jean-Pierre? Puts the rest of us to shame. Yeah, well, again, now with Joe Biden out of the race, they're okay to try and make age an issue, but it ain't going to work for them because Donald Trump ain't Joe Biden. All right, you got 21 minutes after 7. Philip J. Vandervoort III around the corner with a social media sweep. A busy Monday morning as the commute with Carlson rolls along. Talk Radio 570 KVI. Good morning. All right, 727. Philip J. Vandervoort III, what's going on in the social media world?
How about a story of a Puget Sound area plumber that has now gone to help Hurricane Helene flash flooding victims?
Cool story.
Back in North Carolina. Had you heard about
this
one?
Yes.
Yeah. So King 5 is reporting it. They put it out on social media, their handle at King 5 Seattle. Owner of Mount Vernon Plumbing Business, providing aid to people affected by Helene. And the story is the owner of a Mount Vernon plumbing company is making sure those impacted in North Carolina are getting the help they need. Bo McKenzie is the owner of Full Speed Plumbing in Mount Vernon. He drove 2,800 miles to help people there. He left his home in Oak Harbor last week, drove 40-plus hours to North Carolina. He drove with a camper filled with essential supplies, a Starlink so that he can communicate by a cell phone if cell phone towers are still out, and his Jeep that was hitched on the back. He says he has partnered with local churches to provide aid, and he's done similar things locally. He says he's helped in Oso there in Snohomish County after the mudslide, the fatal mudslide.
Yeah.
He's helped on wildfires on the east side of the state. So he says, this isn't my first go round on these types of things, although this one is a magnitudes of scale larger. But just doing this of his own volition.
I can see it on the van now.
Very nice.
Bo on the go to take care of the flow.
Okay. Got some marketing advice from the radio legend. Nicely done.
No, there are some other folks here from Washington who have also headed over.
Yeah, I know first responders have been dispatched or volunteered from the state, Pierce County, and I think the Redmond Fire Department are at least two of the agencies I've heard about so far. But to my knowledge, this was the first one I'd heard about where, you know, private just, business owner
just some guy
took the time to want
I'm
to
probably more needed over
help,
there right,
right
now than here.
Yeah. Let me give you two other quick ones here. This follows up on what you were talking about last hour with black voters and voting for Kamala Harris versus Donald Trump. And somebody posted, hey, if Kamala Harris can choose a white husband, why can't black men choose a white president?
There's another bumper sticker.
And then you just played this clip of the House Speaker Mike Johnson going back and forth with the host of Meet the Press on NBC about Trump releasing his medical records.
Yes.
And somebody commented, let me get this correct. Biden hasn't been competent for years, and the news media, the national news media and the political left hid his health from the public. But now everyone's demanding Trump release his medical records and his cholesterol levels?
No, that it's the same people who were camouflaging the obvious decline that people were noticing about Joe Biden. Though the same people who were maintaining that charade for years are now demanding that Donald Trump release his medical records. The irony there is just too rich. All right. We've been talking national for an hour and a half. What do you say we talk local? Let's get local here right around the corner. Brian Haywood joining us, the man behind the four initiatives here on the Commute with Carlson in 5 minutes or less. The Commute with Carlson coming your way with Brian Haywood. The limit is what our next guest is known for. And he's already achieved success. He's going to achieve more success on Election Day. Brian Haywood, the man behind the four initiatives on the November ballot, the man behind Let's Go Washington, which you should check out, letsgowashington.com, because they got a lot of great stuff coming up. Brian Haywood, good morning. How are you, man?
Good morning. I'm doing fantastic.
So I want to share with our listeners the magic of Friday night. Friday night was the King County Republican annual dinner. It was held in Bellevue at the Grand Hyatt Hotel. And they brought in a congressional candidate who's going to win, a very dynamic young speaker from Arizona. And they had, you know, awards they gave out and whatnot. It was a very successful evening. But the highlight is when one of those awards was given to Brian Haywood, and the entire mood in that ballroom just lifted from one of cautious optimism to euphoria. It was just incredible how everything changed when Brian Haywood got up there and started talking about these initiatives. Did you notice the mood changing as you were speaking, Brian?
Well, I was kind of in my head trying to think about what I was even going to say, so I didn't feel it maybe as much as you did, but I got the response. What I've been feeling around the state is so much frustration and fear, and with these initiatives, I've noticed a change in the way people react when I talk to them. And it's a hope that hasn't been there in the state in a while.
That's the word, hope. There's actually a chance to dramatically challenge and change the status quo by voting yes on each of these initiatives. It was that, again, that entire mood that you often don't see from Republicans, because they think, oh, you know, we're outnumbered and the Democrats have the legislature and they haven't lost a governor's race in 40 years. And, you know, just, you know, maybe we can limit the damage. But no, now it's, we're not going to limit the damage. We're going to take back government, and we're going to do it via the initiative process, which is what I've been arguing for years. And then Brian Haywood comes along and actually makes it happen, Brian.
Well, I think part of it's probably, and some of the response I've got is that we didn't go out with some political agenda, right? This wasn't like, hey, let's swing it one way or the other, left or right. We went out and we said, God, there's some really stupid things that Olympia has done, regardless of which side of the political coin you fall on, telling police they can't pursue criminals when they're right there in front of you. It's just insane. And the pushback against stupid policies from Olympia has sort of made people go, well, first of all, that it happened, it made people hopeless. The fact that there's a pushback has given people just a sense of empowerment that I don't think has been here in quite a while.
Yeah, well, that optimism is there. And Brian Haywood is getting noticed, not just here in Washington State, but also by Hollywood stars. Jane Fonda, admittedly no longer in her prime at age 86, was up here campaigning against the initiatives. And here is what she had to say about Brian Haywood.
Vote with climate in your heart and vote all the way down ballot and vote no on all the ballot initiatives. They're all being funded by a hedge fund guy who just moved here from California.
This is Jane Fonda, who was once married to uber wealthy Ted Turner.
Well,
Jane Fonda from California, coming up here to campaign, complaining about Brian Haywood being from California. Go ahead, I love the ironies here.
and to have it, it shows you that they're certainly not reaching out to the middle. If Jane Fonda is your spokesman,
yeah, great
this
point.
Is a deep, deep left message to the deep, deep left. And then I noticed that there's the science they got behind this was Bill Nye, the scientism guy.
Mm-hmm.
That's about as far deep as they can reach. They're not reaching out to normal, everyday people who are hurting at the pump and who are pissed off that they were lied to about what this Climate Commitment Act was going to do.
Do you know where I first met Bill Nye, the science guy? Air quotes, science guy. we were both on the set of a television show called Almost Live, which was a local version of Saturday Night Live. It would air either right before or right after Saturday Night Live. And Bill Nye was a guy with a degree in mechanical engineering from Boeing who, you know, looks like a science nerd, right?
Yeah.
And then he puts on the lab coat and the, you know, the oversized glasses, and he would perform some really cool science tricks that anyone with, you know, a modicum of knowledge in science would do. And then he worked it into a shtick and became a character that moved beyond the television show, where I would occasionally perform a skit or two and sometimes be the barb of their weekend update type newscast. But Bill Nye ended up going national. And he, again, is not a scientist. He has some scientific knowledge, but he's definitely not a climate scientist. And he sounds silly and says silly things that he thinks he has agency to do because, well, he had a television show for children called Bill Nye, the Science Guy.
Go ahead.
If you compare him to Cliff Mass, you know, who is,
right,
you know, an authority on weather and science at the University of Washington, for heaven's sake, it's not even a close call. And Cliff Mass would probably be embarrassed to be saying some of the things that Bill Nye is with those slender credentials of his. Go ahead.
Well, I was you mentioned Boeing, and I've been thinking a little bit about this Boeing strike that's going on. In fact, I was thinking about it last night. You know, you've got a bunch of machinists, mm-hmm, and employees of Boeing who are afraid for the future, right? And and they're afraid they're going to be able to afford things, and they're afraid are they going to be able to help their family? And you've also got, on the other side, you've got Boeing, who similarly sees all the regulations coming down from the state and taxes on them and new capital. And I think they're afraid of the future. And they're both kind of going at each other. And really, the state is setting up things that's making both of them afraid and both of them afraid of each other. The long-term care tax, go ahead.
Well, no, Boeing as a company concerned that the state wants to end the favorable tax treatment that Boeing had, that it has always been a crummy state to do business when it comes to regulations. You know, several other aerospace companies have come here because Boeing is here to take a look at whether they should
absolutely
locate here,
right,
whether they should expand their operations into Washington. Every one of them has said no. Every one of them who came here to take a look did look and left, said, no, not here. Maybe in Florida, perhaps in Tennessee.
Well, Boeing is half left, right? Boeing has moved operations out of the state. This should have or could have been done here, but they got afraid.
And then you bring up a fair point about the union workers, the machinists. You know, they're about to, you know, they're negotiating a 4-year contract. And so right now they're looking at the state of the economy and rising prices. And of course, they're trying to get a deal that seems outlandish because they're worried about the future. They see how the economy and the rate of inflation and rate of rising price of living, which, let's remember, Brian, is much higher here in Washington than it is nationally, just like the price of gas is higher here in Washington than it is nationally. And so that's causing tension. It's a very good observation you're making for both the company and the union. They're worried about keeping their head above water here throughout the line.
We're going at each other. They've got us going at each other, even if on the political spectrum. The left is going against the right, and everyone's blaming and pointing fingers. Meanwhile, Olympia is sitting back there making law after law after law that is destructive to business, discouraging new businesses from coming here, and punishing workers at a very regressive rate with aggressive taxes, and punishing any new business. I mean, it's so we're kind of going at each other's throats, and Olympia sitting there kind of cackling all the way to the bank.
Okay, well, listen, you got a whole bunch of events that are coming up, and let's highlight two of them. We only have a minute that people can take advantage of. Our radio signal gets a little weak when you get down to Vancouver, Washington. But tomorrow, you having another one of your gas price rollback events?
We've got one in Vancouver, and then the very next day we're doing one in Everett.
Yep. Yep.
So in Vancouver, we'll be doing it at the Chevron on Main Street from 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. And then in on Wednesday, we'll be in Jackson Shell. Right. In Everett on 201 1 and 28th Street, and that'll be from noon to 2.
So I think it's right off the 128th Street exit, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
And that's from noon to 2?
From noon to 2. So they got 2 hours to come in and get gas. And the Jackson, many of these guys have been taking their price down to $2.99 just to make a statement. And again, they were highlighting the difference between Washington and the national average.
Hey.
We shouldn't be that far off when we're a coastal state
well,
with lots of refinery power.
What the heck? We got refineries literally off our own coast. We should not be the second or third highest gas prices in America. Brian Haywood from Let's Go Washington. We're going to have him on several times this week because their campaign is picking up momentum, and that means more and more activities and more events that he wants you to know about. So, again, Brian Haywood, thanks for joining us this morning. We look forward to talking to you again later this week.
You bet. If there's one thing we could ask everybody, it'd be to go on our YouTube website, on Let's Go Washington YouTube website, find our advertisements, and viral the heck out of them. Send them out to all your friends.
Great idea. Go to the YouTube, Let's Go Washington YouTube channel. Send those ads out to everyone. Yeah, we've been playing several of them on the show. Absolutely. Thank you, Brian Haywood. Let'sGoWashington.com. That's Let'sGoWashington.com. The Commute with Carlson Talk Radio 570 KEVI. All right. Maria Bartiromo gets a gold star. She was interviewing Donald Trump about economic policy, and she pushed him on the issue of tariffs. And here was his answer. I thought it was a pretty good one.
I want to get your take on your economic policy. First, debt and deficits, because you've said you want to eliminate taxes on tips, yep. Eliminate taxes on Social Security, on overtime pay, ending the double taxation yep. of Americans living abroad, a proposal to make car loans interest tax deductible.
That was said.
You said that in Detroit. You even introduced this 15% corporate tax rate for companies who produce in America and hire mm-hmm. American workers. But how will you pay for it?
We're
the Committee for
massive.
A Responsible Budget says your plans yeah. will increase the debt by $7.5 trillion.
Yeah. But they don't know. They
the Wall Street close. Journal said that your plans will increase the debt and deficits more than Kamala Harris's.
If I do this, you're going to have car companies coming back to the country because of the taxes and the tariffs. The tariffs will protect them when they come in. So they will protect from other companies coming in, because if the other companies don't come in, they're going to have to pay massive tariffs, and that's it. So I was told, here's what was happening. China was building massive car plants, big car plants in Mexico. That's the new one. And I just spoke to the man that does it. He's a friend of mine. And I said, how's it going with Mexico? What's happening with the car plants? He said, sir, they've totally stopped. I said, why did they stop? Because they think you're going to be elected And if you get elected, you know, I told them, I said, if I get elected, I'm going to put a 200% tariff on every car, and you're not going to ever sell them into the United States. Because if they ever built those plants, Detroit is finished, South Carolina is finished, everything's finished. So I said, here's what you're doing. They think they're going to go over there, build the biggest plants in the world in Mexico, right opposite us, and sell them in. Not going to happen.
Good for her for asking. Good for Trump for pointing out politically the strategy behind the policy, which is that you don't have unfair dumping into the United States. Good for him for making clear that. And that the other thing about the threat of tariffs, it often is a way of ensuring that there won't be tariffs on either side, which is what you want, competition. Columbus Day. Usually it's not quite as busy. Well, this one's busy.
Certainly news-wise it is, yeah.
Yeah, this is a busy day. No taking today off. No. We got too much to talk about here in the Commute with Carlson. Thank you for joining us. A number of people are asking, what about this attempt on a third attempt on Donald Trump's life on Saturday?
It's not really the story. It's not really the case, is it?
No.
Yeah.
No. We looked into it. There were initial concerns when a man had a couple of firearms and a handwritten list of where Donald Trump was going to be appearing.
And this was at a big Trump gathering rally in
this was the
Inland,
big
California,
Riverside,
Coachella.
Riverside County, Coachella. The big festival they have each year.
It's a music festival, yeah.
And a man, 49 years of age, his name is Vem Miller. He lives in Vegas. And he was arrested and booked at Riverside County Detention Center. The local sheriff there said that this prevented an attempted assassination of President Trump. But the sheriff apparently was a little bit ahead of his skis. Deputies found the guns and the several high-capacity gun magazines. After searching his SUV, Mr. Miller's SUV, at a checkpoint in Coachella, the arrest had zero impact on the event or on the safety of the president. Mr. Miller says that this is a huge misunderstanding, that he is a loyal Trump supporter, and he is a registered Republican, even belongs to a right-wing organization. And so it appears that, you know, this was authorities, you know, being overtly cautious, maybe not overly cautious, but very cautious, given the fact that there have been two assassination attempts on Donald Trump already, and you have people like James Carville, the Raging Cajun commentator and political consultant who was Bill Clinton's campaign manager, who's now going around calling Donald Trump a Nazi who wants to round people up. That's what he said this weekend on Jen Psaki's MSNBC show. Of course, Jen Psaki was Joe Biden's first press secretary.
I didn't know that he was going to schedule a rally at Madison Square Garden to mimic the Nazi rally of 10 February 1939. So we have, they're telling you. And by the way, if they win, they're going to correctly say, we told you in the election what we're going to do, and you voted for us. You have green-lighted the whole thing. And if we don't tell people about that, if these young black men, well, how do you think they're going to do? If you're a young black male and Trump-inspired army roundup of people, how well do you think you're going to do in that? You think you got nothing to lose?
Wow. James Carville saying that Donald Trump is a Nazi, that these rallies that he has are really mimicking Berlin in the 1930s, that he intends to round up people, including young black males, just round them up. He is so intent on reversing the momentum and trying to win this election for Kamala Harris that they literally now, this is Exhibit A, they will say or do anything, say or do anything to win this election. And, of course, Carville should be roundly condemned by fellow Democrats because talk about creating a toxic environment. There have been two assassination attempts on Donald Trump already. Saying stuff like this contributes to an even uglier, darker mood. And by the way, Carville knows it. So, just thought you would want to know how desperate the other side is that this race is slipping away from them, that this is what they are now willing to do. This is what they are now willing to say. We've seen this before. In 2012, the mild-mannered, his Republican critics call him milquetoast, Mitt Romney, would, according to the then Vice President Joe Biden, remember this in 2012? He's going to put you all back in chains. They're going to put you all back in chains. When he was speaking to a black audience. When Ronald Reagan was running for president in 1980 and the Jimmy Carter forces saw that the race was starting to slip away from them, they started running ads saying that Reagan was going to start a war, that he was a warmonger, that he was unstable, extreme. Hey, it worked for gold. It worked on Goldwater during the Johnson campaign, so they tried it on Reagan, and Reagan just stayed a step ahead. And when the media came to him, he would just, you know, shake his head, say these attacks are increasingly hysterical. And of course they were. We'll see how many Democrats criticize Jim Carville. I'm guessing this close to the election, we'll be lucky if any do. All right. Let's talk about real fanatics. Let's talk about real extremists. We are now learning that Hamas, which on October 7th, 2023, attacked Israeli civilians hideously, viciously, mercilessly, torturing, killing, maiming, raping many Israelis, 1,200, and took another 250 or so hostage. We're now learning that they did that because what they wanted to do was a 9/11 toppling of a skyscraper in Tel Aviv, which is actually the largest city in Israel there on the Mediterranean coast. We're unable to do it. Documents have surfaced, found detailing Hamas's plans for using, for attacking Israel using trains, boats, anything. The assumption by, that Hamas made is that once it launched a successful initial attack on Israel, Iran and Hezbollah, the terror group north of Israel, would eagerly join in. The report stated that the head of Hamas, Yahya Sinwar, the bin Laden of the Middle East, Yahya Sinwar, was, quote, crystal clear about his ultimate intention, the destruction of the state of Israel, reiterating his goal multiple times and pressuring Iran to help them wipe out Israel. In letters to Iranian senior officials by Sinwar, they requested financial and military aid, promising that with Iran's support, Sinwar said he could completely destroy Israel in 2 years. We promise you that we will not waste a minute or a penny unless it takes us toward achieving this sacred goal. Okay, so there's your real Nazi. There's your real evil person. He, by the way, is now saying it's time to revive suicide bombings. He views deaths of Palestinian Arabs as necessary to destabilize Israel, create unfavorable media attention for them. So he is now in charge of Hamas, and he is, again, as he gets more desperate, he is willing to get more violent. Now, this subject of Israel was addressed over the weekend by HBO host Bill Maher's Friday evening show. And he was singling out a particular celebrity who is very famous with Gen Z. She is a singer named Chapel Rowan. She's 26 years old. She performed in Seattle to an overflow crowd at the Capitol Hill block party. This is one of her hits. So it's a party record, you know, dance party music. And when she performs at, well, festivals and shows, she regularly gets huge donations.
Yeah, she has rocketed into popularity. Yeah, the last several months to a half a year.
Yeah.
Yeah, so she's had a fast rise to fame.
So anyway, she has posted videos on TikTok sympathizing with the Palestinians. She hasn't been overtly anti-American like Macklemore, but she's definitely pro-Palestine. Here is how Bill Maher addressed her on Friday's show. She was not in the studio at the time, but he's addressing his commentary to her.
Now, first off, the fact that you don't know much history isn't your fault. You live in the United States, where the schools stopped doing that whole teaching facts thing a while ago. But getting all your history from TikTok is like getting all your calories from Hostess.
Pictures of Hostess snacks.
I know you're moved by what you see on there. We all are, the dead Palestinian bodies. But it's odd that your generation didn't seem nearly as moved by the Jewish bodies on October 7th. You killed at Coachella this year, but when Hamas kills at a music festival, it's a whole other thing. Doesn't the sight of so many young women raped at a music festival make it a little personal? My guess is that Gen Z hearts are hardened by the propaganda you see on TikTok, which likes to call the Jews colonizers. But colonizers are intruders who have no history in an area, like when Spain conquered the Mayans or when your mom took over Facebook.
Okay, here he continues.
When the Dutch took over South Africa, they had no history to the land. They just wanted it. But Israel is the Jews' homeland, and Jews have always lived there. I cap you not. You can look it up. It's in this book called The Bible, which is horribly wrong about sex ed, slavery, science, and cooking. But the archaeology checks out. It says the Jews built a temple with a really big wall 7 centuries before Muhammad or Islam ever existed, and sure as you can still go there and touch it.
Referring to the Wailing Wall, and of course, Bill Maher's critique of the Bible, let us remember he is very much a liberal secularist, but he's also had his fill of intellectual dishonesty on his side of the spectrum, the political left, and commendably, he calls it out.
Jews colonizers in Israel is like calling Native Americans colonizers here. It's ridiculous. Chapel, did you know that for 2,000 years, Palestine was like an Uber driver with a 3-star rating? Nobody wanted it. And there was never any Arab country called Palestine. It was an orphan province. And if you ask people what they thought about it back then, they'd say it gave them the ick. But after World War II, and after the Jews were very nearly wiped out by an actual attempted genocide, they decided it was time for their historic homeland to be an actual country, so that for once they could defend themselves. And the UN, we like them, right? Yeah, they agreed and voted a country for each of the indigenous peoples. One side agreed to that. But the Arabs had a slightly different proposal. They said, how about we keep it all and wipe you out? Chapel, if you think it was repressive growing up queer in the Midwest, try the Mideast.
Ooh, mic drop moment. Great, great line. If you think... She grew up in the Midwest. If you think it's tough growing up queer in the Midwest, try the Mideast. Wonderful, wonderful line. Anyway, that's Bill Maher trying to explain the facts of life, a different kind of facts of life.
Thank you, Joe Polnicek, Mrs. Garrett.
Yes, when it comes to the realities of Israel, the realities of the Middle East, and what Israel is facing, what it's all about. You're listening to The Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. We come back. Philip J. Vandervoort III with his favorite social media sweep of the day, social media from socialists on The Commute with Carlson. Nice sunrise today. So far, the weather looks okay, Mark Christopher.
Yeah, there was a little bit of the red skies and warning, sailors take warning of a thing going on right as the sun was coming up. And, of course, the rain is expected to pour in this afternoon.
Snow level drops Wednesday, Thursday, 4,000 feet. They're saying White Pass and also Stevens Pass, possibly up to 2 inches of snow.
Oh, already.
But it ain't going to last. It'll be gone Friday into Saturday, it looks like.
All right. So, Philip J., what is going on in the social media world, social media from socialists?
Yeah, I've got a continuation of something I was hitting on Friday's show in the 8 o'clock hour, the social media sweep, sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. And this has to do with funding of public schools in the state of Washington and raising the cap on property tax increases. So the social media handle I'm talking about on this one is a progressive group in Spokane called Spokane Rising. And it was, I think it was Todd Myers that singled out a post by one of the heads of the Sierra Club in Seattle that was saying, hey, we got to get rid of this property tax cap so that we can get more money off of property taxes for Washington schools. Spokane Rising posted, based on the issues faced by local government budgets this year, my number one priority is lifting the 1% cap on property tax levy increases. The cap needs to be at least 3% plus whatever the consumer price index is for inflation. So if you'd like to have your property taxes tripled to bail out mediocre slash failing Washington public school districts, that's the answer for the progressive left, to jack up your property taxes, make your rent more expensive, make your mortgage more expensive. That's the thought process for the progressive political left in Washington right now.
Well, they're not going to get it. First of all, I don't think most people believe that their property taxes are too low, especially now. Because remember, you're taxed on the assessed value of your property, and that property, commercial and residential, continues to rise. So it's 1% off this rising appraised value, and putting that property tax cap in effect is one of the best things we've ever done. That was an initiative. That was an Iman initiative from, oh my goodness, was it 18, 20 years ago?
Okay.
All right. But forcing, that's the only thing that has kept government spending from being completely, totally out of control. And so I think that if you want a real open door to a Republican legislature and Republican county council, keep pushing to lift that cap.
Watch that pendulum swing back the other way, right?
Right.
One of the sister publications to The Stranger is called Real Change News, and it's a labor union-backed publication. This, oftentimes, you see people at the grocery stores close to Seattle that are selling the Real Change newspaper out front.
Sure.
So Guy Oren is one of the writers for Real Change News in Seattle, and he posted a picture of, I don't know, maybe 70, 100 people, something like that. It says, hundreds are gathering today in Seattle to protest against Israel's war on Gaza and in support of resistance groups in Palestine and Lebanon. And even Como 4 covered this story. And the coverage of the Como 4 story kind of caught my ear. Listen to this report from last night.
This afternoon, a pro-Palestinian rally briefly caused a traffic issue on Mercer Street just west of Fairview Avenue. The demonstration started around 1 p.m. and blocked all westbound lanes. Police had to block the on and the off ramp near Mercer Street to keep protesters away from the interstate. But the demonstration only lasted a few hours, wrapping up right around 4:20 this afternoon.
That was oddly specific time to wrap up. Did the pro-Palestinian protesters have to take a break after 3 hours so they go smoke out?
Was there a football game or something?
No, they don't need to fire up a blunt at 4:20. What was going on? I just thought that was a little bit strange that they decided to call an end to the protest march right at 4:20. But there you go.
Today is Columbus Day. We remember just how momentous that day is. And then we have an inspiring story about saints who are walking among us. You're going to want to hear The Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Good morning. Happy Columbus Day, ladies and gentlemen. I'm on the board of the Salvation Army. You probably knew that already. I've been there for a while, and we love to publicize their great works. But there's other great organizations I've also spent time and money supporting. One of them is the Union Gospel Mission. And like the Salvation Army, all they do is good. And they are there to try and help people on the street get their lives together, not just by dispensing services, but by really trying to help cure these people of help them cure themselves of what made them homeless in the first place. So they've been doing great work, and there are Union Gospel missions all over, including in Yakima, where they found themselves in a legal dispute over who they can hire and whether the people hired by this Christian ministry should reflect the Christian values of the organization. The government was telling them no. And instead of caving in to their everlasting credit, they're fighting back. They're fighting back with the help of one of my favorite legal organizations. I call them the ACLU of Religious Freedom in America. That is the Alliance Defending Freedom. They're defending religious liberty because the ACLU no longer does. Anyway, I'm so glad that Ryan Tucker from ADF, the Alliance Defending Freedom, could join us to tell us why they're being picked on. And what's at the center of this dispute? Ryan, thank you. Welcome to the John Carlson Show this morning.
Yeah, thanks, John. It's a pleasure to be with you. And you're absolutely right.
The state has a non-discrimination law in place. And for years, religious organizations have been able to hire individuals aligned with their beliefs with really no problem at all. The issue here is the Washington Supreme Court, not too long ago, gutted an exemption in that law that allows religious organizations to hire like-minded individuals. It narrows the protection down to only those that are deemed to be quote-unquote ministerial in nature. So now all the religious organizations in the state, including the Yakima Union Gospel Mission, are in harm's way due to the state's actions.
Okay. Now, religious liberty is not only enshrined in the Washington State Constitution, it is, of course, also at the center of religious freedom in the United States. It's a constitutional right, correct?
Absolutely. And that's really what's at the core here. The state's reinterpretation of their non-discrimination law has created a constitutional problem, a First Amendment issue. For years, for decades, this has not been an issue whatsoever. The idea that a religious organization can hire like-minded religious individuals is just commonsensical, and there weren't issues related to it. But again, because of this reinterpretation, now all of a sudden, these organizations that do this tremendous work are in harm's way. They have been threatened by the state for merely hiring people that are like-minded. And it's not just insane, it's also unconstitutional.
You know, I've got to ask this. How come whenever this issue rears its head, it's always a Christian organization that the government goes after? I've never seen them go after a Muslim organization for this same violation of anti-discrimination laws.
Well, certainly, I mean, the Attorney General there has had a history of threatening religious organizations and religious people, Christian individuals, obviously the situation.
But he limits it.
No exception.
He limits it. Bob Ferguson is who you're referring to, our Attorney General. He will go after those who act out of conscience because of their Christian beliefs. I've never seen him go after an organization or a business person who happens to be acting in concert with their Muslim beliefs. I haven't seen it.
Yeah, and here, based on the court's reinterpretation of state law, it would impact them just the same. So this impacts not just the Christian community, but others, as you pointed out as well. And you know, look, here what the mission just wants to do is it wants everyone it interacts with to, you know, hear the gospel of Jesus Christ. But you know, again, Washington state officials are forcing the mission to simply hire those who disagree with its religious message.
Okay. So we framed the issue and we framed the lawsuit. What happens next?
So we filed this lawsuit several months ago. The district court originally dismissed the case, saying that we didn't have standing. We basically suggested that we were there, you know, too soon. We took that issue to the Ninth Circuit, to the U.S. Court of Appeals, where the Ninth Circuit ruled in our favor and said, no, actually, there is a credible threat. You have every right to be there, and sent the case back down to the district court, where this past Friday, we had a hearing to decide whether or not we are entitled to an injunction to prohibit Washington state officials from enforcing this unconstitutional law. And the court did not issue a decision on Friday. The judge told us that we'd likely hear something in the next 30 days. So right now we're waiting to see what the federal district court does with our request.
And right now, what does that mean for the Union Gospel Mission of Yakima?
Well, it puts them in a harrowing situation. In order for them to, they're put to a Hobson's choice. You know, either, you know, continuing to hire, you know, with the auspices that the state may come after them, other individuals may come after them, or, you know, lay down on their religious beliefs and hire pursuant to the way the state wants.
But until this judge decides on the injunction, what can they do or what must they do?
Well, I can tell you what they're absolutely going to do, and that is stand on their convictions. That's why they brought this lawsuit. And so, you know, they're not capitulating. They recognize that in order for them to do the great work that they do, there has to be a community of like-minded believers. And, you know, think about this for a second, even in the secular context. I mean, you know, when you go and you work at a business or even in sports, you're rowing. You know, if someone gets out of line, goes a different direction, you're not going to reach that goal. And so it's not just true in the secular space. It's certainly absolutely true here. And, you know, as other courts have warned, if religious organizations are not able to hire, to discipline, to manage their employees,
yes,
the way that they are, you know, historically been able to, then it will destroy. It will destroy the very fabric of the institution. So, it would destroy all religious organizations.
Right. So that leads to my last question, Ryan. Ryan Tucker, again, my guest from Alliance Defending Freedom. They're defending the Union Gospel Mission in Yakima right now. There's got to be case law on this.
Well, interestingly enough, Washington is an anomaly. You know, there is case law out there, obviously supporting this position. But Washington State is an anomaly in the way that it views its state non-discrimination laws. You've got the federal laws, Title VII, that is.
Okay, but federal law trumps state law, so the state Supreme Court can talk as much as they want about the state's anti-discrimination law. The state law does not trump
the U.S. Constitution.
The Constitution of the United States.
That's right. That's right. That's right. And we've got Supreme Court precedent. We've got other cases from not only the Ninth Circuit, which covers the state of Washington, but others that basically say, look, if you take away exemptions like this, you have a First Amendment problem. So we cited to those cases. We pointed to those cases during our hearing on Friday. We're hopeful, of course, that the district court judge will see it our way as well. But if for some reason not, then, you know, we'll take that matter up again to the Ninth Circuit and beyond if necessary. This could be an issue very likely that reaches the U.S. Supreme Court.
Oh, sure. Sure. And I think I know already how the court would likely come down. Religious liberty is something that's very important to this court. Doesn't appear to be that important to the Washington State Court, in the least churched state in the United States.
So far, you're right.
Ryan Tucker, Alliance Defending Freedom. If people want more information about the ADF, which again is an outstanding organization, where do they go?
ADFlegal.org is a great place to go. You can go to that site and you can search for information, not just on this case, but all the other cases that we're involved with across the United States and, frankly, around the world.
Love the work you do, Ryan. Thank you again for joining us. That's ADFlegal.org. ADFlegal.org. You can also support this organization, which I've done financially as well. Thanks for being with us. I really appreciate the time, Ryan.
Thank you.
We'll see how that judge ultimately rules. It is 8:47 in the morning. It is also Columbus Day. A few thoughts about Columbus from a Pulitzer Prize winning book about the life of Christopher Columbus as the commute with Carlson continues. We're back. The John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Happy Columbus Day, everybody. And yes, I know that in more blue precincts, it's now called Happy Columbus Day or Happy Indigenous Peoples Day. In some places, they don't even bother with Columbus. It's just Happy Indigenous Peoples Day. There was a wonderful book about Christopher Columbus written in advance of the 450th anniversary of his voyage to the Americas. He actually never set foot in what is today the United States of America. He landed in the Bahamas. But it was the other side of the world. And the Pulitzer Prize-winning book from 1941, Admiral of the Ocean Sea, points out how Christopher Columbus didn't just change this hemisphere. didn't just change what became North America. He changed the world. Here's a quick excerpt. At the end of 1492, most men in Western Europe felt exceedingly gloomy about the future. Christian civilization appeared to be shrinking in area and dividing into hostile units as its sphere contracted. For over a century, there had been no important advance in natural science, and registration in the universities dwindled as the instruction they offered became increasingly jejune, i.e. shallow, and lifeless. Institutions were decaying. Well-meaning people were becoming cynical or desperate, and many intelligent men, for want of something better to do, were endeavoring to escape the present through studying the pagan past. Man, oh man, does this sound familiar? Sounds like us 530 years later. Anyway. And yet, a Spanish caravel named Nina scudded before a winter gale into the port of Lisbon, Portugal, with news of a discovery that was to give old Europe another chance. In a few years, we find the mental picture of the continent completely changed. Strong monarchs are stamping out conspiracy and rebellion. The church, purged and chastened by the Protestant Reformation, puts her house in order. New ideas flare up throughout Italy, France, Germany, and the northern nations. Faith in God revives, and the human spirit is renewed. The change is complete and startling. A new envisagement of the world has begun, and men are no longer sighing about the imaginary golden age that lay in the distant past, but speculating as to the golden age that might possibly lie in the oncoming future. Christopher Columbus belonged to an age that was past, yet he became the sign and symbol of this new hope, this new age of glory and accomplishment. Christopher Columbus, we thank you, and we are grateful. And I will talk to you again tomorrow.